let me describe what we're going to be up to today. Some more people may come, and we may be the group that helps unravel the tangle we've gotten into. It's a good tangle. It's what's fun about having five sessions. I think you've maybe each entered the conversation at some point, or you'll catch on pretty quickly to what we're doing. Today, I want to come back to this practice of contextual theology and pick up, we were just here last evening, so that's kind of fun not to have had so long between sessions. I can remember much of what was said. And to, if you're for a first time, you'll see there's a lot of entree. We have today and tomorrow morning at 9, now that we don't have Bible study on Saturday, that we've gotten through that whole first verse of Romans 1, we have one more session with this group tomorrow at 9 if you want to come to that. But today we're going to think more about, again, the kind of grammar of discipleship, some facets of it, and then we're going to also have time to practice some of that as we reflect on our own lives, one of the most interesting texts being the one that is our own life. Yesterday, last evening, I put a definition that I've promised you I'm not too deeply wed to, but has been with us throughout the week, and I think it was Chaz who made a suggestion about for the sake of the world needing to be higher up. So here's the new version of this definition, and again, I invite you to craft your own definition. This is one just for our working together this week. Discipleship for the sake of the world. And I take, building off some things I heard Chaz say, that's a particular style, form of discipleship. There might be other people who would say, no, we're discipleship for the sake of faith formation, or we're discipleship with another purpose in mind. But for our conversation, discipleship for the sake of the world is a way of life in which we point to the gospel of Jesus Christ with the whole of our lives. Now, a side conversation that some of you may choose to enter, we're not going to go fully there today, has to do with this phrase. And Michael and I have started a conversation with each other. Michael thinks that point two is too timid and too mute. I have some other reasons that I'm not going to go into right now, that I still want to hold to point to, lest our own ambitious discipleship egos get in the way. But he's made some good points. And Renita, if you were here in last night's session, also used the word proclaim, not just for preachers, but for all disciples. And so that would be another aspect of the definition we'll find some time tomorrow morning to look at. But within this definition, on our very first session on Monday, I said I brought five commitments, and these I would fight over. I mean, I would hold firm for these, the definition less so. And here are the five to reintroduce this. And then I'm going to invite us to spend a little time talking about what's at stake in several of these, and also invite you to add to the list at least things you'd want to say about discipleship. Now, this is not discipleship yet at the level of activity. If you were in the Romans session this morning, that moved from because, therefore we do specific things. But it's more about what undergirds that therefore. First one, this rests on God's call and God's sustaining presence. I don't think any disciples are volunteers. I think we've all been drafted. And it has to do with God's call. And some of us have felt we were searching a lifetime and then heard that it was God calling us to a particular way of life. Others would say, well, it must have happened long before I was paying attention, because I've just always had a sense that my life was a Christian life. But what undergirds our way of life, our discipleship, is God's calling and God's sustaining presence. And I put that at the top of my list because, again, it's tempting to turn the freedom of the therefore, how will you live, into something we get pretty busy about and possessive of, and sometimes far too bossy with other people about their discipleship. So rest on God's call. We've been throughout our time talking about faith practices rather than rules. Who here is a musician? Okay, I'm going to tread gently in the way of metaphor because I'm not a musician. But there are some things about keys and chords and ways that music come together that I think might be an analogy with faith practices that are different than saying, here's exactly how everything is going to be played out. And faith practices are also things akin to worship at the center of the Holden way of life, our discussion last evening. Communal, I don't think it's a big surprise. It was Pastor Eric who said last night, it's that word we up there that we want to keep our eyes on. What we do as disciples is always communal, even in our solitary times. Christians are not always clumped together, but are always part of something larger than one individual. And here's where I think Chaz's argument was very compelling to me, expanded from saying oriented toward the world, what are the needs of the world, what's going on in the world, to also say for the benefit of the world God loves. And so that would be discipleship for the sake of the world and not just for the sake of the people we are closest to, although they are also a part of that world that God loves. And then as we've been practicing, there's more than one right model, and that's going to be part of our small group work today, is coming up with what does that look like for the real people in this room, to always be contextual, thinking about real life circumstances, thinking not only locally but globally for all of us. This improvisational move that Michael set up so well, if you were in the Bible study this morning, by saying he didn't know what it would look like in that space for grace, you'd have to figure it out. And I want to say you'd have to figure it out communally, and you'd have to keep figuring it out because discipleship is also always reforming. Nadia has just left, and so I want to speak of her appreciatively, but she, as much as any of the teaching staff this week, showed us what a real community of faith in Denver, House for All Sinners and Saints, have been about. But I think by the time she makes it home, they're going to have to look again about whether they're about the right things, because they can't say, well, we've figured out Holy Week. This is what we did, and we've figured out outreach to our neighbors with IV. No, that's what they've been doing. They can build on it, but they're going to also, even in that exciting place, have to be always reforming. A lot of freedom language there. Anything you want to question about this before I ask you what you would add as a description of discipleship or a characteristic of discipleship?
I'm going to do a little of both.
Bring us word of what they're figuring out over there. Next door, Mark is figuring out with others, doing some contextual leadership, I think, work about whether our Christian faith makes a difference in how we lead. Other features of discipleship, please.
I just want to make a comment about the point, too.
Mm-hmm.
I shop in the Safeway store, grocery store in our town frequently. And I'm always, there's many cases where I can't find an item.
Uh-huh.
So I'll find a clerk and I'll say,
yeah,
where are the breadcrumbs? And they never point. They're not allowed to point. They always take you
to there. Okay, and it could be that some language of take others to this gospel, or it create those encounters with the gospel would be better language.
I like that too. That's why we shop.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost, you have to say, I want to have to point, you know, and then they'll come.
Part of my concern is that people can get very curious about other human groups and miss that it's actually about the gospel of Jesus Christ and be interested, like anthropologists, in other human groups. So, but you see the dynamic that at least I continue to wrestle with. Anything else you want to put as a sort of grammatical claim on discipleship? Please, Aaron.
I'd say it's thematically connected to Jesus' way of forgiveness, generosity, trust, and peace.
Let's go, please, that was a great list, if you'd say it again. Jesus' way of forgiveness?
Forgiveness, generosity.
Trust and peace. And just, Aaron, if you would, or ask somebody else to help you out, say a little bit more about what you mean by trust. That's a relational term. Trust in, trust with, trustworthy.
Trusting that God is trustworthy. It's then connected to the first, it rests mm-hmm. on God's call and sustaining presence. And by thematically connected, I mean it'll mm-hmm. it'll look different in Jesus's first century culture than it might look in ours, but there'll be a connection there.
Some might pick up on that thematic connection, also say a correlation, a recognized connection, a grammatical connection, depending upon what frame of sort of big level thinking one brings. I think that's a very helpful addition to the list. And a number of you throughout these times have said, what about Jesus and the life of Jesus, Jesus's own model? What else would you say? Nope, it's got to be on the list. I'm going to be firm on this. Any other characteristics of discipleship?
I think, and maybe it's in there, maybe it's already in there, but I think it has to be kind. And I think it can't be puffed up.
So arrogant, self-serving.
It should not be arrogant or self-serving.
Yeah. Let's see if Aaron will allow some more words to be added.
Humility.
Humble, or yeah, humility. Okay.
What do they say? Not puffed up.
Yeah.
Isn't that one of the descriptions in the Bible?
And in fact, the overlap with Romans, I'm liking St. Paul more and more after 5 days with all of you in verse 1. So some characteristics of discipleship. Anything else you want to say? Nope, we got to have that on the list. Okay, that'll be working list for now. This is unfolding week, so you're allowed to... come back if you have some other ideas.
Something about honesty. So much of the kind of political and social gospel that we hear seems politically correct. No, it's something about motivated by honesty. You don't have to write it down.
Claire, I think you're onto something because you've used the word motivated by. Let's play with the language here. What else might we say? Honesty's part of it, but please.
I just to be real, that we're not perfect and. And even as a church, we're mm-hmm. definitely not perfect. But
there's something more than being one right model.
Yeah.
You know, I really try to watch with an open mind some of this televangelism yeah. and so forth because it's so predominant among so many people. And I look at it and I say, get off it. You can't believe that. You know, it doesn't feel real.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't feel real.
Please, skip.
Authentically transparent because we're not trying to put ourselves forward.
Yeah, transparent.
What are we trying to put forward?
The gospel of Jesus.
So the language of honesty, transparency, authenticity, also being echoed right across the wall in the leadership gathering. I suspect here, Claire, that part of what you've cracked open, sociologists of religion have long noted how useful religious convictions are for purposes other than faith formation. It's one way to motivate. If we think about world events right now, it's one thing to have somebody who wants to be a political activist, but if you add the fuel of, and these are my core, deepest convictions, you are off and running no matter which particular identity one is running toward, whatever cause. And I think, and again, there may be wonderful gifts that those who use public media bring via being TV or radio evangelists, but often that, like all other things using those medias, can be about something that's behind the scenes. Come join our way of life, come buy our products, come turn into something else that's motivated by other than God's call or by the gospel. So I think whatever we want to say, I'll just put, if I can get away with, motivated by the gospel, and not a lot of other purposes. And this, I think, is part of the always reforming burden I feel as a pastor, because sometimes it's a thin line between a good idea, cleverness, and boy, this will get more people in the door. And I don't see anything up here that's about getting more people inside the door. Discipleship for the sake of the world is largely about getting outside the doors. Any other convictions? This is very, very helpful. Well, let me put a test question before you. Last night we had 15, 20 minutes we spent on what's the Holden way of life. And so I want to think about Holden again. Do we have any staff people? Oh, we're being recorded. I can be checked out later. I want to know why Holden isn't a cult. And the reason I say that, I'm pretty isolated. The tools of my trade have been taken away from me. I don't know about you, but I checked my cell phone just to make sure the other day, and it had gone dead because it's been searching so much for a connection, it finally wore itself out. So a tool of my trade, my daily life, has been taken away from me. I'm forced to eat and sleep with strangers, by and large. And while on the surface there's great hospitality, are we sure this isn't a cult? Okay? If you'll play along with me. What would it be about the Holden way of life and our own experience here right now that convince you that you're not part of some cult? Please.
There aren't secrets. We're open to what our beliefs are.
Okay, there's open expression here. And again, all the things that we're going to generate here, think about how that plays out also in terms of discipleship. So openness. Please, Sunny.
Nobody's approached me and asked me to believe anything.
So far?
So far.
How many days in?
Today's our fifth day.
Really. Yeah, see, it could happen on day six.
Okay.
But so far, what you see is what you get. It's open, generous hospitality for which you've contracted. I mean, we all made plans to get here. There's no something behind the scene that's coercive. What else? Sandy, what would you know that makes it not a cult?
Well, there doesn't seem to be a grand poobah who is in white and there and with a big vat of Kool-Aid to be really.
Yeah. So far,
right.
We haven't figured out
that
there's
hiding.
Yeah.
It could be the form of the deer or the bear that we're not aware yet.
So shared leadership would be a feature of why most of us are pretty comfortable saying, others might think it's a cult, but I don't think it's a cult.
Right.
Skip.
Well, even in the education, you know, there is an acknowledgement that other people think differently.
Right.
You know, you and Mark and Michael may be saying similar things, but none of you are saying, we all have the truth, and this is the truth.
Right. Yeah.
And so you're not, in all the years that I've been here, in a variety of times, in a variety of settings, I've never had the feeling from anybody that there is only one truth, and the Holden way is the only way.
Okay, very helpful. somebody else, let's, I'm going to ask your name because I've met you several times and forgotten.
Gail.
Gail. We'll go to Gail and then Mary Carlton.
We see people coming and going every day on the bus. And we're free.
And we think they do.
Free.
Are you right?
Yeah, you know. That's true. And I was going to say that I don't feel like there's anything expected of me here, but
yeah.
We are kind of expected to go to Vespers.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean,
let's talk about that, because
no,
those of you who were here last evening, Carol made it very clear that while there were a lot of aspects for the Holden way of life at the center, I think she made a pretty compelling case, at least for me, that at the center is the daily gathering for worship.
Yes.
And that's the one, I don't know that they do a patrol if you're not in the village center at that point, but that's the stated expectation is worship. And I, in a minute, I want to say a little bit more about the difference it makes that the center is gathering for worship. Mary Carlton, maybe it is a cult. What are you thinking?
No, I'm not thinking that it's a cult. Usually with cults, I get the feeling that there is an in-group and the other, all the people are trying to be a part of that in-group, but there's a common enemy that can be easily identified by beliefs or something like that, in which they're continually saying, now don't be like those people.
So an us and them mentality, which I have to admit, I haven't heard any of that here.
Yeah.
Any other?
I don't know that that's true of all cults, but it just seems, it sort of seems that way.
I think the nature of cult is to be set aside from others. Sunny?
I've dealt with cults, several of them, not as a member, but have dealt with them, and it's not a cult. And I don't know how to explain that, except that when I, the only thing that I get when I pay my money here is stuff.
Yeah.
No one has offered me anything but stuff for my money. And not a single time have I been offered an additional level of spirituality or time in the presence of the master for my money. All I get is stuff. And that's the center of a cult.
Thank you. Please, and tell me your name.
Ruth.
Ruth, thank you.
There isn't pressure to do things a certain way, and there isn't the brainwashing of something continually at you.
Yeah. We're not being worn down, we're being built up and fed a lot. Plenty of sleep. Thank you, I'm so reassured, but the reason I wanted to use that image is, and we're gonna spend a little bit more time with the Holden way of life, because part of the syllabus for today is to have each of us reflect within that space of grace about our own lives. And I think it's helpful to have a little communal discussion about, well, how would you know if your pilgrimage is leading you towards something that's recognizable by the criteria I just erased, or is more turning inward, and that's not exactly how I would define a cult, but so think of what we've just said as kind of criteria that you're going to put before some of your own answers. I want us to think just for a little while about the Holden way of life, and here's the sun shining over the mountains. And I'm putting worship right in the center. And some of you have been here a few days, some of you have been here for a length of time, some of you have been multiple times at Holden Village. What could we say characterizes this worship at the center? What's worship life like at Holden? You'll go home, your friends will ask. What will you tell them about worship life at Holden?
Singing's great.
Okay, there's something about communal music, because there is a choir. I think a couple of you are in the choir. But there's also the whole community sings, and great to have an experience of great singing. Please.
And there's a variety. It's not the same format.
Okay. There's a kind of creative openness around worship. What else would you say about worship at the center?
It's joyful.
Okay, another characteristic, it's creative, it's joyful.
It's the place that we're all together.
So everyone, I'll say welcome, and no one at the door says, well, let's check your belief system, or are you a first time or an experienced person? You just, everyone is expected to come, and therefore everyone is made welcome there. What else at worship? What always happens at worship?
Well, one of the things that, I don't know, I'm not going to answer that question right now, but, you know, first of all, I was going to say that there are things at worship that can be challenging.
Okay.
Nadia's sermon last night, for some people, could be very challenging. But it was invitational, and it was also proclamation of a wider, broader openness.
So a challenge, rather than a, boy, this is just, we may be comforted, but it's not a comfort zone to reinforce everything we already believe and act and
correct.
Do. There is that challenge. Skip, you mentioned proclamation. Word, sacrament. There's not sacrament at every service. I believe, I've only been here a few days myself, but I think always the word.
The sacrament was done on Sunday.
And there's, if some of you may know the history of the baptismal bowl, but how beautiful that is. And so if there's not an actual sacrament of baptism on in a given worship service, there are, we know, we are reminded that we are a baptized people coming in and out of that space, the sacraments, and the word.
I think, and a little more on that, many years ago at Holden was the first time I heard someone say, this isn't our table, this is God's table, and you are welcome if the Spirit calls you to receive communion at this table, it's your, and that's become a really foundational understanding to me, that the table belongs to
yes.
God, not.
So the welcome of all in the village goes right back up to the sacraments, and I think if Pastor Eric were here, he would say it's the welcomeness at the table that makes the village so welcoming. In terms of the Holden way, I'd say this is the grammar contextually. It's what happens here leads to all those other things we were saying. We wave at the bus. Food is my big point. Food and coffee are always available. Conversations flow. You're free to speak to strangers. One of you had the image that if a bag is left, everybody doesn't get paranoid about it. It's more like, whose bag is this? How do we return it? Rather than, oh no, something bad is going to happen. When we think contextually, including of our own lives in terms of our pilgrimage, which is the theme today, very important to keep focusing also on what's at the center of that. Try to think of an analogy, and since I've told you how much I like the free access to food, the unhindered access to food, I once went to a gathering that was held at Hamburger University outside of Chicago. It's a big corporate headquarters built by McDonald's, and it is an absolutely incredible campus. You can't find any McDonald's food there, but there is really, really good food. And at Hamburger University, food really is at the center, and learning how to market food and selling food. You can also rent the space. I was there for rented space. You could have a center that wasn't this center, and you could build a conference center, that's what Hamburger University is, where people would note the hospitality, how everyone speaks to one another. There's a whole culture of that. On and on and on. You can just imagine. Look, when you have access to the internet, look up Hamburger University. That sense of from the center, we go forth. And that's what we're going to switch gears and do, is to think in a very personal way, because we are real people, not so much individualistic as real people on our own journeys, but we're going to share some time together. And what I would like to do, we're going to do two activities in the time we have. I'd like to invite you to look at a portion of the gospel text for Sunday. And that's important to me because I'm the Sunday preacher and you're my text group. And then
that's
we're
not
gonna.
True. We were part of a text group earlier this week.
You're yep, the next text group. And then we're gonna, after a few minutes on it's Mark 6. We're gonna look at. I'm gonna share. If you don't have a copy of the big question sheets, we're gonna break into small groups and do those. It's Mark 6, 30 to 34. And what I'd, some of you have been reading along this summer in Mark's gospel. Some of you are just really good at looking forward and backward. Some of you can even remember last Sunday and a sermon you heard or a text that you read. Can anybody introduce this text? What's been going on at this portion in Mark's gospel? And feel free to peek back at the start of chapter 6.
Well, there's kind of two things immediately. Jesus sends out his 12. Mm-hmm. And then we somehow move directly into the beheading of John the Baptist.
Yeah.
And so that's where we kind of pick up here from the 12.
And in fact, take a look at verse 14. Skip has really said what the two stories are earlier in this chapter. Take a look at verse 14. King Herod heard of it. And the scholars would say it may have been in part the witness, this gospel that is Jesus' life, or it may also have been that the disciples have gone out, in a sense, proclaiming the gospel and doing some very specific things in that time and place as they traveled through the villages. The whole trigger for why John the Baptist arises as a character, why this story is now in place here, is to put it up against the witness of discipleship, and it's also to get us caught up on the story of some things that King Herod has been up to. And that powerful preaching by Pastor Eric last Sunday about the way that we all seek just desserts from those who differ from us or those who have offended us. Well, let's take a look at Mark 6, starting with verse 30. And if somebody would read those four verses.
The apostles gathered around Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. He said to them, "Come away to a deserted place all by yourselves and rest a while." For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in a boat to a deserted place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they hurried there on foot from all the towns and arrived ahead of them.
Because I'm at Holden, I'm feeling more creative. Goes with the ethos. Suppose it were we had been commissioned to stage the presentation of this gospel text. You've all been in the village center, you know the worship space. How would you stage it if we weren't going to just have one person stand and read the text? Anybody have a little spirit of creativity? What would we do to stage this particular text? We'd want to get some kind of boat, okay? And maybe we could even build one in the craft shop or something, or somehow find a boat this high up on the hill and drag in the boat. What else would we want to do for staging this?
Have a deserted place.
Okay, so maybe we could block off some seats or something so there was an area where no, because it's a pretty full space in the worship center. We'd have to make something that was deserted. What else would you do? Some of you have a little theater background. What would you do to stage this?
A shoreline where people could see from the village, see that they were coming in. You'd have people, the villagers processed down to see who was coming.
We could recruit some people beyond just this group to be in our play and to play the, they could, what do we call those in a film? The
stand-ins.
The stand-ins, the extras. We could recruit some number of people to be that crowd that moved around.
It's kind of, it'd be like kind of like an oval where the light was. disciples and Jesus would be going across that oval, but all these other people would have to be running around the edge real fast so they could get there before they got to the other side.
Yeah. So in fact, we'd have a lot of motion back and forth, mm-hmm. which is actually what's been happening here in Mark's Gospel. Back to the 12 having been sent out, they go out, they're back in and out. And this incredible phrase that is so not the ethos of the Holden way of life, no leisure even to eat. Do we not find time here to eat?
Many times a day.
But I think, at least my gamble would be, most of us can resonate with other times in our life where there is no leisure to eat. There's too much to be done, the back and forth. What do you make of this come apart to a lonely place or a deserted place? How does that sound in your ear? What do you make of that message, please?
That was the summer theme at Holden several years ago.
Uh-huh. And you came to visit in those days. How was that theme lived into?
I think the idea that we needed to go out away from our routine, away from our normal life.
Yeah. And thus not to grieve my cell phone too much.
Right.
Skip.
While I've been here, I've had this book that was put together about a book of hours
mm-hmm.
that was with monk Gethsemane.
Thomas Merton.
And it was it's his writing that puts together in a 4-session. Each day, and all through that is sprinkled the sense of silence,
mm-hmm.
the sense of solitude, the sense of contemplation. And so for me, that's what this text has done. And the reading for this morning reminded me of the Mark text, because it was an image of going back and forth
mm-hmm.
between the solitude
mm-hmm.
and the busyness
mm-hmm.
of life. And of course, Merton talks about from almost like New York City
mm-hmm.
busyness
yeah.
into Gethsemane solitude, where he's the only one there looking at the trees.
Are there other, I think Merton's a very, very helpful reference. Are there other people, big known names, or just somebody you have encountered in your life who have also modeled or taught you that rhythm of sometimes with people in the midst of the busyness and the work and the service and the time away, the quieter time, the time of prayer, and prayer in solitude? One can also do that in the midst of the world. What would be some of those people?
Kathleen Norris has
mm-hmm.
gotten involved with the Franciscan
mm-hmm.
monks.
Benedictine. So her, right, Kathleen Norris would be, again, one introducing that kind of monasticism in our generation.
And Sister Wendy, who is a
yep.
British art person,
mm-hmm.
got permission within her order to live quietly. I mean,
mm-hmm.
she wasn't from an order that was quiet. And so she got permission to live in a quiet way, although then she went back into doing TV shows and things like that and writing and stuff like that.
So that rhythm
she
of the
went back and forth.
The very public life, and then the time away for rest and renewal. Anyone else mm-hmm. want to name somebody who's been that for you?
Oh, our local pastor a year ago mm-hmm. in Uzbek. In fact, he had been overseas to do Martin Luther's walk, and somebody
mm-hmm.
came back, and actually this was part of his revival. He
mm-hmm.
came here to open.
Yeah.
He wanted the solitude here, and came away just very much energized again.
I suspect in about a week's time or a day's time or 2 weeks' time, some of you are going to be that for others, or at least have a chance to put words, or if you want to be more mute, simply to point to something you've done that's part of the fabric of discipleship for the sake of the world, is to know there can also be the seasons of coming away. That's right. Aaron's good reminder about Jesus' example, the Jesus way, included the times apart. In this particular text, it's Jesus who says, now come away. Yes, please.
And even in re-
I mean, Jesus was human, and he probably felt that we have to go do this. And they didn't have much time. They had the boat ride. But, it was something.
And at least the intention would suggest that they were making an effort to go away for a longer period of time. I think one of the phrases that's important to remember is the whole of our lives. And as you just described, we also are passing, we too are compost. We're on our way to being compost, passing away. And so to think of the rhythms of the Christian life of discipleship, particularly discipleship for the sake of the world, where there is still something to give because something has been renewed in that back and forth rhythm. Please.
I just think of some of the people that I know have a heavy load in their lives. I'm thinking about a person who's a mother and a pastor, and she just has some special stuff in her family she has to deal with. Well, she has built into, because she's lived long enough to know herself, she has built into her monthly routine, like she gets a massage every month.
Yeah.
She has a spiritual director. She's intentionally a part of certain groups of people that are, even though she's with others, it's one of those groups that creates a safe space to reflect on your life in the context of others. And I respect that hugely, because it isn't just, get yourself worn out by the end of the school year, go hold it, try to get some of it back. She knows herself well enough, and she knows her relationship with God well enough. And it's so that she has the energy to do the other things for the sake of.
And not a slight for Hamburg University, but I think if the center is here, it's more gracious not only toward ourselves but toward others when we see them needing a time apart. Here, in part, Hamburg University was built so that corporate leadership and local managers could be trained to go back and be even more productive and efficient. And I don't think any of the promises of the Holden way of life are to make any of us more efficient when we go back. What I'd like to end, please, Claire.
No, I was just going to say, aren't we guilty in our church lives of asking the same people to take on a load over and over and over again? And we, rather than saying, maybe they need a break from teaching Sunday school, or whatever it is, that the people that have done the work continue to do the work.
And not only the individuals, but I think many of our congregations have gotten so busy with activities that they're, sometimes the discipleship for the sake of the world is just swallowed up in things that are actually internal to the church. There needs to be something that's internal to have the center, but the sending of people out. And again, because we live in that kind of culture, we see ideas, we know how to implement ideas, others are implementing ideas. And so the task today, I'm going to invite you to break into whatever group size seems comfortable to you, but if we could break into two or three groups here. Some of you weren't around at the start of the week when big questions were shared, but not having a cell phone, I've learned I do have access to a copying machine, so there are new copies for this. And what I'd like to invite you to do is in a small group, we have only about 8 minutes to begin that conversation. To look at questions three and, to look at questions, I'm reading the wrong number, four and five on this list. And in the spirit of doing contextual theology, this really is homework for you to carry forward, but you've got some good conversation partners here. I'll interrupt you in 8 minutes, and again, listen to one another and see what kind of ideas come for questions four and five. We're going to do it. Okay. Oh, okay.
One, two, three, four. Patricia, you need to go do your dishes.
Friends, let me interrupt you. just long enough to excuse myself, because part of the freedom of this space is if you want to continue your conversation, you can either here or over at lunch. I hope groups were as fruitful as the one that I was in terms of our being finding that safe space, that space of grace where we could begin to say, these are some of my own needs, or sometimes we say that by speaking of what we see in others, but it's often a reflection on ourselves. Overnight, I would invite you to think about what role a come away, Jesus' invitation, plays in your own discipleship plan. And I don't want plan to sound too rigid. Improvisation often comes with a slight script, a few clues and a few tools. So I mean, what's your plan? That's part of the, I hope the encouragement of these big questions is not only for you, but for others back in your home place to begin to have these kind of conversations about a way of life that makes sense to you. Tomorrow morning, for reasons I can't explain, there's one more teaching session. It's this topic, and it's at 9 o'clock in this room. And that's not our usual time for topics. We're going to come back. Please come. You've been a great group today. Come if you're able, and if you're not, we hope some other voices will come and join the conversation. We will look at some Lutheran themes, because we've not done too much of that, and I want to do that as we end. They've bubbled up from time to time. And also, think about our marching orders going back home, that marching in the sense of the gospel announcement, victory proclaimed, victory is ours, questions 1, 2, and 3. So if you're not able to be here, that's what we're going to be looking at on the big question sheet. Thank you so much for your time together. I'll be one of your dish doers.
Okay. So are you telling us make sure you scrape?
Scrape, yeah.
Scrape your up. I'm a...